Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, who still sounds like this. It's time to begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news. Joining us today, it's Ira Fussfeld, who is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, and our own Alan Shartok. Good morning, all.
Hi.
Good morning, Ray.
And Ray, you'll have to give me a few minutes before we start. I wanted to get a little pine tar on my microphone so I wouldn't lose the grip on it.
As fresh as today's headlines, that's Ira Fussfeld. Yes, well, we'll talk about that whole controversy and pine tar and pitchers a little later on in the program. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We start today with net neutrality. From the New York Times, the Federal Communications Commission said on Wednesday that it would propose new rules that allow companies like Disney, Google, or Netflix to pay internet service providers like Comcast and Verizon for special faster lanes to send video and other content to their customers. This is affecting what is known as net neutrality, the idea that no providers of legal content should face discrimination. And people say this is all about money. Some people are up in arms. Let's go first to our senior panelist today, Alan Shartok.
Well, you know, Pete Seeger used to have the song, Ray, called, it was called a Zipper song, and it went something like, I'm as happy could be, and you could change it. But I would change it to I'm as corporate can be. This Supreme Court is a corporate court. And we have seen it in the past. We're going to see it again. As somebody comes up with a new idea that might take something away from a corporation or give something to a corporation, you can almost predict where they're going to be.
So you think this will go to the Supreme Court? Right now, it was a federal appeals court that struck down twice, I believe, agency rules intended to have this net neutrality. The FCC said yesterday that they would propose new rules that would allow the big companies a wider pipe. Ira.
Well, right. It's important to point out that the FCC, which is proposing rules, had originally proposed rules that a federal appeals court did not like. And the FCC's initial set of rules was for net neutrality.
Right.
And now the court is saying, no, we want you to go more in this direction so that people who are criticizing the FCC or who are saying, quote, that it's gutting the open internet rule are wrong, because it's not the FCC doing it. It's the FCC following the guidelines of the appeals court.
And the appeals court follows the guidelines absolutely of where they know the Supreme Court is going to go. And that is,
unless you're the Ninth Circuit Court.
You name a corporate issue, and you can be pretty sure that if it's contentious and somewhat reasonable and not outrageous, that the Supreme Court is going to go there. Citizens United being a perfect example of that.
Mike Spain, consumer groups are already saying, listen, the prices will go through the roof if this happens.
That's right. This is going to become pay to play. The internet is supposed to be free. That was the philosophy behind it. It's going to become a toll road, and the big powers, you know, companies like Netflix and Disney and Time Warner, or Comcast when it takes over to Time Warner soon, you know, will be able to decide who's going to get the best access. Verizon would be in that group too. Who's going to get the access to the internet, and where whose products are going to have preference? And if you're a small startup and you require some bandwidth to make your new invention work, you're going to be in trouble. And one of the areas that will be hurt by this, they say, is if you're a small game company and you have interactive games over the internet, there won't be enough bandwidth. People won't get good results. They'll get those little TikToks on the screen while they're waiting for the buffering to happen because they're not a big player.
So in other words, you need massive funding in order to get the bandwidth needed for some applications.
That's right. And that's going to take a lot of innovation out of the whole process.
Right. So bigger companies who have the wherewithal will be able to pay for these faster lanes of transmission to the detriment of smaller companies or individual startups that just simply won't be able to compete and won't have the money to get going. And the internet is a relatively new phenomenon, but it seems to me the sense of it from its beginnings was, as Mike pointed out, it's open for everybody. It's free access. It's a whole new world. And now we're getting into this money and corporatization that we're so familiar with in other areas of our world.
Alan, this fight has gone on for about 10 years now. And as the New York Times points out, lobbying is likely to increase as the rules haven't been circulated, they haven't been formulated, and they will be circulated. So where does this end in your estimation?
Well, it's going to end where I told you it was going to end. It's going to end in the corporate corner. They're going to win.
The Supreme Court?
Yes, it will. Somebody will bring it there, and if they don't bring it there, it's because they know that they're going to lose there. I must say, Ray, in all our years here at WAMC, we probably got more mail about the importance of keeping net neutrality and keeping it open than any other single subject we've had. So now you have this popular issue of a lot of people on one side, the major institutions, governmental institutions, as long as Obama, he doesn't get to change that Supreme Court. It's going to be 5-4 because any of the justices that retire will probably be the more liberal justices. And if something really happened which could change the composition, you'd see a fight over the Supreme Court that, like nothing you've ever seen before.
I think it's important that we do point out that this is not yet a done deal. That the initial report of the FCC rules, proposed rules, was made by the Wall Street Journal. I don't know that there's been any official announcement yet, and that the proposed rules still need to be circulated to the others on the FCC, and so there is still room for feedback. There's still room for tinkering, and whereas the court cases that have involved net neutrality came about because of the large internet service providers making a complaint, it is now time for the grassroots organizations and individuals and good government groups to say, no, this is not what we want. So there is still time here. There will be the formal proposals won't be released until, I guess, today. And then it will be released for public comment on May 15th. And it will be at least until the end of the year till there's a vote. So it's not set in stone yet, but now is the time to start gearing up the opposition to this.
And Mike Spade, go ahead.
Trust me, it's set in stone.
Mike Spain, it was clear the FCC chairman, who I believe is an Obama appointee,
indeed.
Said yesterday and was quoted in the New York Times that speculation that the FCC was gutting the open internet rule, Mike, is flat out wrong.
Well, he says that, but he says the new rules right. will still provide for some form of net neutrality. And they'll stay within the court's decision. But it's the Wall Street Journal reports are enough to, raise questions about that. And if it does get to the Supreme Court, I agree with Alan, it's going to probably go go in favor of the big companies. I wonder
what. And can anybody tell me what the initials FLW stands for? Read the head of the FCC.
FLW,
famous last words.
Very nice. All right, Ed, let's have that email address, Ray. Why, okay. roundtable@wamc.org is the email address. Feel free to jot us a note, and if it is good and clean and not filthy, exactly, and brief, we may read it. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. We'll take a short break and switch gears here in a moment.
Support comes from Stone Barns Center for Food and Agriculture, Westchester, New York, helping to improve the way America eats and farms, offering spring and summer gardening, foraging, and cooking classes. StoneBarnsCenter.org for schedule. HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting Boeing Boeing by Mark Camaletti, weekends through May 4th at the Saratoga Spa State Park. HomemadeTheater.org. And Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community. Berkshire.coop.
The Roundtable on WAMC, 9:21 is the time. Alan Shartok is here. Ira Fussfeld is here. Mike Spain is here. Ray Graff here in for Joe Donahue, who's still a little under the weather, but he may be here perhaps tomorrow. We'll find out. By the way, you can take our new app with you. We would love it. Download the new mobile app for streaming audio, headlines, podcasts, and more. Just go to iTunes or Google Play App Store, search WAMC, install, mix, and enjoy. It's very nice, and we hope you enjoy the app. The email address, once again, roundtable@WAMC.org. And, Alan, we have an email.
Yes, we have an email. We have a winner. and it's from Drew, who says, "Dear esteemed panel, this country is increasingly being divided into a blatant elite who come first, gets parks and favors, and second-class citizens who have to pay extra for anything and are penalized for being less affluent. It's un-American, if you ask me. Thanks, Drew."
Okay.
There you go.
Hasn't it always been like that? You guys are old.
I'm older, and yep. I'm the oldest. And there does come a point at which some of our politicians, some of our media institutions like the New York Times or Franklin Delano Roosevelt or Harry Truman say, hey, cut some slack for the people with the least and make sure that they don't get kicked out of their homes. When the greed takes over completely, which is exactly what happened in the great housing bubble, and you want to kick everybody out of their houses and repossess them and all the rest of it, that's when you're offering nothing to those with a little. And that's when it gets dangerous for that class. And that's why we have the kinds of politicians we see with Roosevelt.
Although I tell you, the only room for optimism, and it's really putting the rose-colored glasses on, is because there is so much media now, and because there is with the internet and all of the rest of it, that the bright light of corruption or potential corruption or corporate influence, or however you want to describe it, is more likely to be brought to the fore. Now, whether or not it will change the basic structure of the government, because you've got in many cases, what is it, the foxes are guarding the hen house. We don't know, but you know, this is not new, I guess is my point. You go back to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and what all of that was all about, and you can find editorial cartoons from the earliest days of editorial cartoonists of the fat cats. But it was not nearly as well known, I think, and that's because the media is so much more prevalent today that it...
Well, for whatever it's worth, Ira, I couldn't disagree with you more.
A surprise.
Yeah, man, that's amazing.
Just because it's proliferated doesn't mean that it's more powerful. I mean, look at your newsroom. Look at the newsroom of all the major papers as reporters go bye-bye, and we have where you used to have 50 people, you have 10.
Well, that's a problem, but there are more places beyond the smaller newsrooms.
Right, but where do you go?
The cost to publish is much lower.
Yeah.
The threshold is much lower if
a voice. You guys can say that, Mike and Ira, but I don't think so. I think what happens is, as it gets more and more bifurcated, as it gets more and more split up, and there are fewer professionals doing this work, I suspect that the power of the media is less, not more, because it's all split up all over the place. But who knows? I know one thing. Ted took some issue with what our discussion is, and he said... and Ted says, how is the internet supposed to be free, yet it took money to build it, and it takes money to maintain it and grow it? Yes, moving forward should not stifle innovation and the little guy, but any resolution should simply not blow off the larger investors. That's from Ted.
Well, I think there's some validity to what Ted says.
And I'm sure the courts will agree.
I'm surprised that you're Ray.
Why? Ted makes a point worthy of discussion, and the email address here is roundtable@WAMC.org. Yeah. We're almost out of time in this half hour. I wanted to jump into the story about the new gun law in Georgia. I fear that we could either start it now or tread water to the bottom of the hour.
No, let's start it now.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Let me read it. We'll set it up, and then we'll knock it down after the news. This from the New York Times, sweeping measure expanding rights of gun owners, signed into Georgia law. Dateline Atlanta, a plan to bolster the legal rights of gun owners that opponents have derided as the Guns Everywhere bill was signed into law on Wednesday by Governor Nathan Deal. The 29-page law, which goes into effect on July 1st, was approved overwhelmingly last month by the Republican-controlled legislature with some support from Democrats. It'll expand the roster of places where gun owners who hold concealed carry permits can take their weapons, to include bars. Critics said its scope created new dangers. Let's start with Mike. We'll go around the room once. We'll take a break. Well, then we'll pick it up again.
Well, it does. It did back off of some of its broader aspects before it was adopted and signed by the governor. Churches now can prohibit the guns from coming in, and public buildings like the state capitol, which check people before they come in, they can prohibit it. So they're not available everywhere, but it is. I think it's as much as a philosophical statement as it is a practical issue. They're just affirming what they believe is the Second Amendment rights, which they compare to other constitutional rights like freedom of speech and freedom of religion. Now it's freedom of guns.
I'm reminded of, it was either he actually said it or was mocked by a comedian for saying it, the former senator from Texas, Phil Graham, who was mocked for saying, in effect, I have all the guns that I need, but not all the guns that I want.
Yeah,
and
that's
that sort
exactly
of reminds
right.
me of this.
And by the way, they've made it very clear that they intend to go for even further places. I mean, right now, naturally, you can't bring a gun in past the guard, the TSA guy, but you can bring it right up to him. Or how about schools? You can bring guns under this Georgia law right into the schools. And this is really very scary to me. It is.
Well, if you have a concealed carry permit,
yeah,
I mean there are certain places you can't carry, but if it's not prohibited, what's to say you can't if you are legally entitled to have a concealed carry?
And I think the key is that you have a permit. And at the end of the day, I wouldn't feel nearly as negative about this law as I do because the people who should not have guns have guns.
And I think that's the real issue is guns that people aren't supposed to have.
Right.
That is much bigger of a problem than the guy who has
or
lady
permit.
who has a concealed carry permit. And there are, of course, issues about there is the shall issue. And then there is the may issue as far as states. New York being a may issue. In other words, it's up to local law enforcement. There are states like Texas and many others that are shall issue. As long as you meet the criteria, you get to carry concealed carry. So I'll tell you what, let's take a break. We'll pick it up after the news. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Mike Spain of the Times Union is here. Not the Knickerbocker News, though, right?
Not since 1988.
Fair enough. And also Ira Fussfeld, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, as well as Alan Chartok. I'm Ray Graff. You're listening to the Roundtable. Back after news. And welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's a Thursday morning, beautiful sunshine. I just went out and checked the air. 9:36 is the time. Ira Fussfeld is here.
You went out and checked the air, or did you have other reasons to go out?
No comment. Mike Spain is here as well, and Alan Chartok. Good morning, all. We were talking about, before the break, the gun law that was signed yesterday in Georgia, and we have a couple of emails on that.
We do. Ken wrote, "Go Georgia."
Okay. Concise.
The permitting process is key to successful gun ownership regulations. We must all remember why the citizenry was afforded the right to bear arms in order to protect ourselves from a tyrannical government. And BAS writes, while back in North Carolina, gun owner put a sign up barring guns in the place. It's legal to carry to carry in that state. When interviewed, he said guns and drinking don't mix. After 30 years in the business, he would know. And then let's see here. George said, the problem with allowing firearms in drinking establishments is that mixing guns and alcohol is generally a bad idea. The same thing is true of guns in courthouses where emotions are already running high. You know how many times Law and Order, the whole thing ended with somebody getting killed on the steps a lot. And so there you are.
Okay.
And we have a lot of other stuff, but let's go for this.
Yeah,
for that for now.
And we'll read some more mail coming up. Roundtable@wamc.org is the email address. And to recap what we had discussed just before the news, a sweeping measure expanding rights of gun owners signed into Georgia law. It was signed yesterday by Governor Nathan Deal. It's a 29-page law. Approved overwhelmingly by lawmakers, mostly Republicans, it'll expand the roster of places where gun owners who are legally able to carry a concealed weapon can take their weapons, and that includes bars. And you're right. I you know, maybe there is something to be said about alcohol and firearms. I know alcohol and club soda works very well.
That's correct. Alcohol, club soda, and firearms, maybe not so
okay.
well.
Okay. So I missed the initial point. Are you saying if you are drunk, you can carry a gun? Why should you have any more right to carry a gun when you're drunk than you do driving a car when you're drunk?
Well, I don't know about whether you're drunk. It just says, according to the law, on the roster of places where you can now carry guns in Georgia, it includes bars.
Oh, well, that's great. That's a great mixture and not a recipe for disaster.
We'll have to see if crime goes down in Georgia, Ray.
Yeah, and there's a book, and I have no idea about how well-researched the book is, but there's a book called More Guns, Less Crime. It's by John Lott. And basically, what he says is, violent crime rates go down when states pass shall-issue concealed carry laws. So the shall issue means, as I said before the news, you basically meet a certain set of standards set by the state, and they will issue you that concealed carry. New York, I believe, is a may issue, which means you have to go through, I believe, county law enforcement, background checks, and whatever else that they have to
do.
And
then it's up to the judge, really. And you might get a different judge, and he might decide that your background isn't suitable, while another judge would have granted you a permit.
Apparently, FBI, and again, these are statistics. I have not vetted them, but the Wall Street Journal was reporting that shall-issue states have seen violent crime go down. May-issue, it doesn't seem to have much of a difference. Ira.
As long as people who are gun owners and gun advocates are disbelieving of the notion that we don't want to take your guns, all we want to do is for law-abiding people to register, and that people who are not law-abiding should not be carrying guns. As long as people are doubtful of that principle and believe that the government, in fact, does want to take your guns, we are going to be at an impasse on this issue. And then when you add in the advocacy and the money that the NRA and other gun ownership organizations can provide, and that the people on TV and radio who are also in those same advocacy positions restating those fears, it seems to me it's hard to be optimistic for those of us who say, yes, there is a Second Amendment, yes, you should be allowed to carry guns, but no, you should not be allowed to carry guns if you've not registered or purchased them properly.
And Tony says, yes, let's bring guns everywhere, especially bars where there have never been altercations. Yeah, he says. It's the Wild West again. Hooray for the old days.
Well, isn't it, when you watch those old Western movies and you see the guys walk into the bar and they all carry their six shooters on their hips. So that's
sure.
The Wild West is perfectly
accurate.
Doc
Holliday, and of course Wyatt came along, and you know what he got involved in? Gun control. okay, so SJS says, I can't imagine a country that makes it very difficult to obtain a pistol permit, carry, and conceal license. That also restricts the law-abiding citizens that have gone through all the channels. If we are to make laws for our safety, we have to expect or trust them to keep us safe. If they don't, why are we pulling our hair out over the laws that we don't like or trust? Let's ignore them or stand behind them. Even schools, Americans can be trusted if we trust them. People will bring weapons to school with or without the law in effect. Steve S. Okay.
Just
and
on the
Claire,
cusp of being too long, Steve S., but that was
yes,
okay.
Is.
Thank you.
And Claire says, maybe this law is good. This might reduce the number of people carrying guns since they can now shoot each other after they get drunk.
Nice. Well,
the stats about crime and the connection to guns, I just wanted to say, I mean, one of the reasons that crime has gone down is the sort of changes in culture about drug use. The more drug use kind of comes and goes, illegal drug use, and crime seems to be, violent crime often seems to be associated with that, and it seems to be on a downturn. Crime goes down. When it picks up, crime picks up. There's other reasons, is all I'm saying. I'm sure sociologists and criminologists could tell you a lot of others.
Well, the FBI statistics, and this is quoted from an article by Jason Riley in the Wall Street Journal. You may take it with whatever you decide you want to take it. It's quoting here from Jason Riley's article. It's also worth noting that gun ownership rates in the Midwest, 39%, and South, 50%, far exceed gun ownership rates in the Northeast, 22%, yet violent crime is down more in the Midwest and South than it is in the Northeast, according to the FBI statistics. What do we make of that, Ira?
I'm just stuck thinking about the Wild West. I just think that my hero, my hero is Bat Masterson, because according to the way he was portrayed on the TV series, he didn't need a gun. He just carried that walking cane. And what became of Bat Masterson? He wound up being a sports writer. So what does that add to the discussion?
Not a great deal. Alan, what do you think that adds to the discussion?
Nothing. Nothing.
Nice. But it's interesting.
It's called a segue.
Well, what I loved was when Ira said, according to the way he was portrayed on TV.
Yes.
You know, these guys, you see them, you see their pictures and they look, you know, they don't look too good. And then you see how Hugh O'Brien looks or one of those guys look, and that's a whole different story. That's what we call historiography.
Well, when they do the movie about you, we'll get Johnny Depp or somebody to do it, Alan. What do you think?
Well, I think I would be proud to
All
do
right.
that. Yeah.
Fair enough. If you have a suggestion of who you'd like to play Alan in the movie, please email us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan is here. Ira Fussfeld is here. Ray Graff is here. Mike Spain from the TU is here. And we'll find out what's new in the TU next.
Support comes from Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. River Valley Market, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery. RiverValleyMarket.coop. And Mass Mocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting David Newman Dance on April 26th and The Russian Doctor on May 9th. MassMocha.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:45 on this Thursday morning Roundtable panel. Ira Fussfeld, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Mike Spain of the Albany Times Union, and Alan Shartok of WAMC, along here with Ray Graff. And Alan, we have some email.
Oh, we do. We got a lot of stuff.
Okay.
On the net neutrality.
All right.
I don't think we could read it all, to be honest with
Fair
you,
enough.
Because you just don't have enough. But
time. Edit, old boy.
But
edit.
Walt's. Yeah, I'm trying to do that on the run. Walt said, "Call me Walt, please."
All right, Walt.
Suppose net neutrality changes, which allegedly envisioned, take place. Then do you suppose that WAMC, the TU, the Freeman, most other news providers will be able to pay for premium fast delivery? And do you fantasize that your online audience will stay with you if your non-premium status takes you them back to speeds comparable to dial-up 3G cell service speeds? I don't think so. Bye-bye, providers of info to an informed electorate.
Okay.
And, but if a small newspaper company wants to do the digital world with live streaming, etc., and does not have the wherewithal to spend the kind of money that the larger companies mm-hmm. are spending to get those faster lanes, then you're at a disadvantage.
What about a public radio station that has an iPhone app?
Yeah.
What will that mean for that?
Oh, ouch. Okay.
By the way, last week we talked about the WAMC app, and I said if you had it, it would automatically update, and that was incorrect. I wound up downloading the new WAMC app, which, by the way, is very good, but you do have to download the new one.
Oh, you definitely want to update.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
No.
Get rid of the old one.
You will not automatically. You have to get rid of the old one.
Out with the old and with the new. What else you have, Alan?
Okay. Eleanor says, quick thought, the Internet is also called the World Wide Web. Is the USA the only country passing laws on any issue regarding the WWW? Do our courts pass laws that negatively affect the rest of the world as well? No wonder America is looked upon as we are. And there are other people who wrote on a similar thing saying, let's pass a law in the Congress. And the question then became, if a law is passed, couldn't the Congress pass a law? Well, no, because as they say in Bridge, the Supreme Court always trumps the Congress. And if they come along with a net neutrality law, it's possible that it'll stand. But it's also possible the five guys on the Supreme Court will say, you've done away with bad rights.
All right.
Well, Congress can pass a law, but of course the fear is that Congress is similarly influenced by corporate interests, and thus the kind of law it would write would be corporate favorable.
No, I think there are differences. I do think there are differences when you're directly responsible to a political constituency, as opposed to when you are responsible to nobody for the rest of your life, which is what goes on the court.
All right. Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union. And Mike, casinos, 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 it's the story that keeps mushrooming.
Yeah, the headline on our Capital Confidential today is Casinos Here, There, and Everywhere. And, you know, so Wednesday at midnight, last night at midnight, was the deadline for developers who want to be in the game to ante up $1 million. And around New York State, about 24 prospective casino developers ponied up the $1 million, and that's the bidding fee, and that's necessary if they want to go forward. And we have a map in the Times Union of the region around the greater capital region where some of those sites are. The interesting one, as of late last night, now maybe at the last minute this happened and we missed it, Schenectady did not have a bid. That was one of the sites, downtown Schenectady or just north of downtown Schenectady, where the Galesi Group is developing a kind of a multi-urban waterfront development that will bring in, you know, residents and hotels and boaters and recreation. That was talked about, a casino for there, but that appears to be off the boards now. So they're
Now, why do you say appears? Is there a chance that maybe
they walked in at midnight and did it? Yes, that's true, Ray. Some of these bidders do not have to identify their location, and there are a couple who could land in Schenectady afterwards, but the developers who were doing the project in Schenectady apparently have not put down $1 million. Now, somebody else could be looking at that site and working with them, and there's still some unknowns about it. But the key sites that are being looked at in the capital region remain the ones we've talked about, one off of Exit 23 of the New York State Thruway, just inside the city of Albany, one in the town of East Greenbush by the developers who had abandoned the project in Saratoga Springs. That overlooks the city of Albany from up off of Route 4 in East Greenbush. And then there's still some possibilities of House Caves in out near the Howes Caverns site in Schoharie County. And then there's a site in the city of Amsterdam in the town of Florida, which is, you know, just west of Albany. And there still are some developers who have put the $1 million in, who could be the ones to develop Delayette's Landing, the site in Rensselaer, the city of Rensselaer, just across the bridge from downtown Albany. But that's a little unknown. Meanwhile, there's a lot of interest in Orange County. Now, Ira, the Hudson Valley was hoping to get some Catskills economic revitalization by having casinos, but it seems like most of the interest is in the Newburgh area and the Woodbury area, and possibly the old Neveleys in the Catskills.
Well, no, there are sites in play in Sullivan County and the Neveley in Ulster County, and it seemed to me that the original concept of placing two of these in the Catskills / Hudson Valley was to place them in what was used to be called the Borscht Belt.
Yeah, right.
And in particular, Sullivan County, the Neveley is close enough to Sullivan County, so it included. If in fact Orange County comes into the mix and is in fact selected, in my opinion, and I believe in the opinion of the Sullivan Ulster Group, that will in effect put up a firewall, because it's going to attract people from New York City who will drive to Orange County to gamble, but who will not drive the extra 30 or 40 miles to Sullivan County Catskills. And again, I think that also defeats the original notion of we want to help revitalize the economy in Sullivan County and in Southern Ulster County. So it's of great concern, but there are a number of players. You have people representing Mohegan Sun, people representing Foxwoods in the Catskills area, in the Sullivan County area. And I believe the number I saw was that there are 8 suitors in that area, including the Orange County people.
But I think the whole thing is disgusting, to be honest with you. We can talk about all the people who are applying, but the question is, what is happening to our society when we start to invite people to gamble so that we can have poor people?
But don't you think that argument has long since been
an old argument.
I mean, you may be right. I don't necessarily disagree with you.
I may be right.
Well, you may be right.
What's your argument?
You may be right.
I don't get it. I am right.
But it's too late. It's all cow's out of the barn.
Exactly right.
The cow is out of the barn, so we just have to go with it. Maybe it's time to start rethinking this. And you know what? It may be too late later on. So maybe, just maybe, when you get a governor who comes along and says, this is the way to start about an upstate economy. Well, maybe one could make the argument with other things that are illicit or immoral or unwise.
Well,
that's what I have to say.
So you're saying that no one gambles except legally?
I know who gambles, and so do you, Ray.
Let's start that. You're saying that no one gambles but legally. So in other words, if there are no casinos in New York, no one will gamble?
I have many questions. I've raised them, and I think fairly up until now. One, does it encourage people who tend to obey the laws, who don't go to the mafia games or roll the dice or do the rest of that stuff? Are we essentially, instead of having a progressive taxation system, saying that there will be a lot of people who use the milk money in an effort to catch up? I don't like it. I've never liked it, and I'm telling you that now.
Alan, all those arguments were brought up before the constitutional amendment was voted on by the state's voters, and it didn't fly.
So yes. That's what it is?
It's been passed. It's the law. What we're talking about is it's a fact that there's going to be licenses awarded this fall by the state gaming facility location board, and it's going to happen, like it or not. So we're not debating the merits of it. We're talking about the logistics of it.
I think we're talking about the wrong thing. We're sitting around here saying, well, should there be two here? Should be there three here? Should one be up there? Should one be down here? Oh, that's all very interesting, but I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is what is happening to us as a society.
That's a big, great question for a much longer period than the 3 minutes we have left. Absolutely right, sir. And we will take that up on a Vox Pop, perhaps. I think as we have. Ira, before we go, I got to bring up the pine tar thing. Did you see it?
Oh, I saw it. So did everybody else, including the umpires. For the uninitiated, a pitcher for the New York Yankees by the name of Michael Pineda, in cold weather now twice, has prominently put pine tar, which is sticky stuff.
Really prominently.
Yeah, very prominently. And he put it on his person so that he could use it on his fingers so that he would have a better grip on the ball. Now,
what do you mean his person? I don't get that.
Well, he initially put it 2 weeks ago in a game against Boston. He put it on his palm of his pitching hand.
Yeah.
And he said it was dirt,
so he flat out lied about that. So he was reprimanded internally, was not punished. The next game he pitched, he did not have it. But then last night in Boston, where it was very cold, he had a very poor first inning, and so he came out in the second inning with pine tar on the side of his head, on his neck.
On his neck.
And it was so visible as to be laughable. And the Red Sox were reticent about complaining about it because all pitchers do it, but they do it much more discreetly than this. So finally, the Red Sox manager came out and said, "You got to check this guy. He's got pine tar. And the umpires went out and they found it, obviously, and they threw him out of the game, and now he faces suspension. So two things come out of this. One is there should probably be a rule change, because it has been a sort of a acknowledged fact in baseball that it doesn't do anything to the ball other than help you grip it. And batters like that, because they don't want pitchers just throwing the ball and having no control on it.
Please.
But wait a minute.
It's true.
The second point is you never should underestimate how stupid somebody is. And this guy, did it the first time, got away with it after a fashion, and then did it again.
He might as well put it on the front of his forehead.
Unbelievable.
And when we're done with them, let's get the spitters all out of the game.
They have more or less policed that, although you never know who is particularly clever. But this was just such stupidity.
Before the game, the Red Sox manager said, and he was addressing the issue, and he said, well, you know, if he uses it, I hope he's a little more discreet, essentially.
Yeah.
And he was not discreet. This is the day of HDTV. In the old days, when you're watching with your rabbit ears on your 18-inch black and white set with fuzzy, you may not see that. Now everybody can see it.
The way it was glistening off of his neck, or the couple of weeks ago off of his hand, you didn't need TV to see it.
It looked like barbecue sauce. No. Definitely not dirt.
And if you watch the Yankees broadcast last night, two of their analysts, David Cohn and Al Leiter, both very successful pitchers, admitted that they did the same thing, but they hid it. They put it on their belt buckle or something like that because it's been part of baseball lore. Yeah, we all know we're doing it, so we're not going to blow the whistle on this guy. But they had no choice. But the Yankees general manager, who is to his credit, said he was embarrassed. The organization was embarrassed. And, you know, hopefully this guy is going to get the message. But the stupidity that he should do, and the Yankees manager claims he did it on his own without.
So Ira, if I hear you correctly, you're saying don't get caught.
Well, that's right, and that's what baseball, and
that's been the baseball.
That's
culture.
Right. That has been the. There are a lot of sort of old bromides in baseball that people get away with, and this was one of them. But not when you're going to stick my nose right in the face of it.
And we're out of time. And I think that the Major League Baseball and all the players are saying, you know, you were so obvious. Now we can't do this.
Yeah.
And we've all been doing this, and it's fine. And now, thanks to the guy who puts it on his neck, we all have to stop. Well, maybe they changed the rule. We are out of time.
I put some pine tar on my microphone, and I didn't drop it once today.
Our chief of engineering, Pat Cooney, won't be upset at all. Mike Spain, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Ira Fussfeld, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Mr. Allen, thank you.
Very frustrated.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. Hour two of the Roundtable on the way.